Last Word on Today FM.
I'm delighted that we're joined today for the Culture Club by Gary Lightbody, who of course is lead singer of Snow Patrol. Gary, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me, Matt. How are you doing?
Very good. And I'm fascinated to talk to you about a new book that you've released, which is related to last year's album, which is also out now, an extended version. But tell us about the book, The Forest is the Path.
Yeah, so I normally, when we make an album, I write enough words for the lyrics of each song. And I don't really think about, you know, writing more words. I write quite a lot, but I don't. I always thought an album would be contained lyrically upon the album itself. With this record, though, for a few different reasons, and I'm sure some other reasons I haven't even thought of, the lyrics just kept seeming to sort of spill over the page. I just kept writing and writing. And the songs kind of grew and grew and grew sort of outside of the music. And I just was like, this feels like something else. It feels like something separate but connected. And then I kind of realized that what I really was trying to get at was the death of my father and how the two things were connected, how his death and the kind of the numbness of the year after his death that I went into. And then I wrote the first song for the new album the day after that numbness dissipated. So that the sort of, it feels like a sort of a continuum. So the book kind of came out of having way too many lyrics for the record. I never really thought it would be a book. I never thought I would have the patience to sit down and write a book, because I've been writing 4-minute songs for 30 years. I managed to sit down long enough to write it.
And Gary, tell us, how long is it since your father passed away, and what sort of relationship had you had with him?
He passed away in December, just before Christmas, the 20th of December, 2019. So just a year before, a few months later, we'd all be in lockdown. Just around that sort of time in life, and I loved him dearly, but we had a little bit of a contentious relationship through quite a lot of my life, you know, from my teenage years to into my 30s. Really, we argued an awful lot, and the book is kind of me trying to come to terms with that, with not having,
what did you argue about?
Wised up earlier in my life, and maybe had more time with him, talking cordially about his own life and learning more about him. You know, but we were just diametrically opposed on pretty much every issue. You know, he's very conservative and very liberal. You know, I don't think it's an unusual father son dynamic. But by the time I cottoned on to, you know, I don't have to start fights and I don't have to rise to fights when they start. It was a little bit late in life, but I did have, you know, a few years before his dementia kind of really took hold, where we got on very well. He was just a towering figure in my life. He really was just an extraordinary, amazing father in that way that dads that just get on with things. He always just showed up for us. Me and my sister, we were talking about it recently. He always just showed up. He was just there for us, you know, but it was never like the, I love you, you know, there kind of father, but he was just the guy that like action, you know? I just guess I probably didn't appreciate it
How did you bring that into the book? So is it sort of almost sort of philosophical musings or essays?
No, it's a narrative. So there's four chapters entitled Jack, part one, part two, etc. And dotted through those chapters are the themes of the album. So it sort of switches back and forth between 4 days in my life after my dad passed, the day he died, the day after, the funeral, and then a year later. And it's that year later that connects his death to the album, because I wrote the first song for the album the day after that.
And you've now got an extended version of the album out as well.
Yes, so there's 18 songs on it now rather than 12. And yeah, we had one of the songs that the only song that was about my dad on the record, a song called Waking Up Now. We kept that one off because we knew that the book was going to come later. So we kept that off until the extended version. So it sort of didn't sit on the record being the only song about him. It seemed to disqualify itself at that point. But now that the book is out in the world, it makes more sense.
Okay, well, best of luck for both the book and for the extended version of the album. And thank you for taking the time to go through all of your choices. We always start with every guest on the Culture Club with the first single that they remember buying. And yours is one by Kool & the Gang. Tell us about this.
Yeah, my family were out and there was records, I think, like at the supermarket or something, like they used to have records. And we were allowed to have one thing. And I picked a 7-inch of Kool & the Gang Rolling. And I think I was about 8 years old. I'm not sure I knew what I was buying at the time, to be honest. It's funny because I think it was misled on one side and Rolling on the other, but my memory isn't great. But they're from two different albums, so I don't know why that would be, but maybe a Kool & the Gang super fan would know why that was in the audience. But that was one of the only pieces of vinyl in the house. At the time, my mum and dad had between them about 10 or 12 other pieces of vinyl, most of which was country music. And there was a Nana Muscuri record in there. And there was Mo Bandy, Merle Haggard, Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, Nana Muscuri, a little bit more slightly away from the countryside. And there was the London, I don't think it was the London Philharmonic, but it was an orchestra plays the songs of Lennon McCartney. So it was the only Beatles record in the house. It was an orchestra playing Beatles songs.
And
so,
then you added this by Kool & the Gang.
I added Kool & the Gang Rolling and Misled to that amazing collection.
Let's hear a bit of it.
Just for you. Yeah. Girl, I know it sounds funny, but I want you for my honey. Yes, I do.
Yeah, that's the recognisable sound of Kool & the Gang, isn't it?
This is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I definitely didn't know what I was buying back then, but Kool & the Gang are awesome, you know. But I think I was just, I think I probably just picked it because I like the look of it.
Let's go to favorite album.
It was a 7-inch, you know, record with a hole missing for the little bit in the middle, and I was just fascinated by vinyl, I think, at the time, when there wasn't enough of it in the house.
Favorite album? And many people say impossible question, and Gary Kemp was with us recently and he said the same, and just plumped for one that we decided to discuss. You have picked an absolutely magnificent album, one that more than 30 years on is still, I think, one of the best 20th century albums worth listening to all the time. Why have you picked Jeff Buckley's Grace?
For many reasons, his voice being one of them, his musicianship being another. He was an extraordinary guitar player. He made the guitar do things that I think, you know, lead guitar players don't necessarily like. I mean, he was essentially a rhythm guitar player, but he played it with just such invention, and like he made it do things that I just don't see too many guitar players able to do that. There's a new, a reasonably new guy around McGee, who I think is a sort of a direct descendant of Jeff Buckley's guitar style. He's sort of taken it to a new level. But there's people that just come along and just sort of break the mold. I was at Dundee University at the time, and we didn't have like our little dorms or whatever. We didn't have TVs, or I didn't have a TV in mine anyway. But there was a TV room, and it would always be empty at like night at like 2 a.m. And I would go in there and just switch on MTV and just watch MTV. And I'd more often than not, just be by myself in a sort of massive TV room. And this sweeping kaleidoscope of guitar comes on, and this gorgeous human being starts singing, and his voice is like that of an angel. And it's Jeff Buckley with the title track of the album Grace, and I just was completely mesmerized, just completely and utterly transported. That album, as you say, you can listen to it over and over again, just do it anytime. It's been with me all that time. I think at the start, that's what I really wanted to be. I wanted to be Jeff Buckley, but I didn't have the chops for it. But that was also 1994. That's the year Snow Patrol started. So that album came out around about the time we started as a band as well. So it has it's a big part of our story.
It is a wonderful album. There's many more brilliant tracks other than Grace, and the one that we have a bit of is Forget Her. Such a shame to cut that off. That is such a brilliant track. That's a terrific choice. Jeff Buckley's Grace is one of the great albums. So, Gary, let's move on to favourite band or artist. You've given us a few. We'll talk about Nirvana in a moment because they also pop up in the best gig you were at. Bon Iver and Frank Ocean are two you've picked out as well. Tell us a little bit about why you've picked them.
I think probably more than anyone else in the last 10 or 15 years, they have, like in terms of music, they have been responsible for saving me in my darkest hours. Their albums, their songs have been a salve on the broken pieces of me so many times. I think, like, regarding Stax from his first from Bon Iver's first album, is one of my favorite songs of all time, and Pink and White from Blonde from Frank Ocean, again one of my favorite songs of all time. Pink and White, I had a very making the second to last album Wildness. It was a difficult time for me, and I was in a very, very bad place, and I for some reason. Song's not really about this, but for some reason it spoke to me and just kept calling to me. I just kept needing to hear it, and I played it again and again and again. I absolutely credit it with saving my life. So Frank Ocean and Bon Iver are as high up as it gets for me.
How are you these days, Gary?
Really good, thanks. Yeah, that was a time I'm glad that I got through, and I'm glad I can remember it so that I can make sure that I don't end up there again.
Good. Look, we're going to play a little bit of Frank Ocean. This is from Channel Orange album. This is Lost.
Double D, big four breast on my baby. Triple weight, couldn't weigh the love I got for the girl. And I just wanna know why you ain't been going to work. Boss ain't working you like this. He can't take care of you like this. Now you're lost, lost in the heat of it all. Girl, you know you're lost, lost in the thrill of it all. Miami, Amsterdam, Tokyo, Spain, lost. Los Angeles, India, lost on a train, lost.
Frank Ocean there and Lost. So the last bit of music I want to talk before we go to the break, and I already mentioned Nirvana, because the best gig you remember being at is from the King's Hall in Belfast in 1992, Nirvana, Teenage Fan Club and The Breeders. Tell us about that.
I mean, it's still the best lineup. I could. It's my second gig ever. My first gig was at the Ulster Hall, Red Hot Chili Peppers in 1991, support from the Rollins Band, or Rollins Band. So technically Henry Rollins was the first person I ever saw on stage, but then Nirvana the next year. And I listened to the gig again. I didn't realize it was on the audio was on YouTube, and I listened to the show again and was sort of flooded with memories from it. But that was my first. I was too afraid to get into the mosh pit in the first gig. Everything was too new. But I got into the mosh pit and tried my hand at a bit of crowd surfing and got flattened. It was just the gig itself was amazing, and the ringing in my ears after it. I wouldn't wish this anymore because I have permanent ringing in my ears now. But at the time, it was like a remnant of the gig that I carried home with me. I didn't want it to end. I just wanted to carry a piece of it. And I woke up the next morning, the sort of ringing was subsiding, and I was just desperate to kind of hang on to something from it. But it was a transformative show for me because it made me want to be in a band. Nirvana was the band that made me want to do it. The life that I have now, you know, I wonder, would it be different if it wasn't for Nirvana? I think it probably would be.
Let's hear a little bit of Nirvana live from that year. Smells Like Teen Spirit.
We'll be right back.
Oh, one of the greatest ever opening tunes to an album, I think that one perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never mind. Okay, Gary Lightbody of Snow Patrol, stay with me, please. We need to take a quick break and we'll be back with the rest of the Culture Club after we've had the traffic. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Gary Lightbody of Snow Patrol is with us today. The album The Forest is the Path is now available in an extended version, 18 tracks, and there's also a new book that we've been chatting about a little bit earlier in today's Culture Club. But let's move on to non-musical choices, Gary. And I think it's fair to say you watch a lot of movies, do you?
Yes. Your movie question was actually harder than the music one, I find. I have too many. There's too many movies.
Okay, but you have to pick one. So what have you gone for? Have you gone for a few for me, have you?
I did go for a few, what's the list? What's the list I sent you?
You sent L.A. Confidential, which is terrific. Ridicule.
Fantastic film.
Star Wars. Which one of the Star Wars is it? Every Star Wars movie?
A New Hope. New Hope. I mean, I love the first three or the second three, depending on what numerically you're going to go for. But Empire Strikes Back. Yes, it's the cooler film, but Star Wars was just absolutely, that was my childhood. You know what I mean? Star Wars just made me just mesmerized. I don't know how many times I watched it, but it was hundreds.
And then you've won from the early 1990s, and we're going to play a clip from Goodfellas with Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta, and we have to give a language warning because we are not bleeping anything in this.
Oh, fuck is... Gee, I wish I was big just once.
You're a
big cock.
You're a physician. Really funny. Really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, it's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
It's just, you're just funny. It's funny, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Tommy, you got it all wrong.
Oh, Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
You're funny.
You mean, let me understand this, because maybe it's me, I'm a little fucked up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you. I make you laugh, I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
I'm not just, how you tell a story, what?
No, I don't know, you said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. Tell me what's funny.
Get the fuck out of here, Tommy.
You motherfucker. I almost had him.
Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta. Incredible scene from Goodfellas.
That scene. Incredible. Yeah.
If you love movies, what about theatre and plays?
I don't get to the theatre as much as I would like to, but I tend to go when friends are in plays and things like that.
Yeah, you've nominated War Horse at the National Theatre.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Bruna Gallagher was in it when I saw it. So she's a good friend of mine. And I saw her in that, and that just absolutely blew my mind. I just like the staging of that and the sort of, I don't even know what you call it, puppetry, I guess, but like it seems even more than that, because it felt like it was just bringing the whole thing to actual life. You stop seeing the kind of puppeteers after a while, and just it was extraordinary.
You also given us a play that you've actually not seen live, but you've read.
No,
The Crucible.
Yeah, I read it a lot. It's one of those plays that I read. You read at school, and then it sort of stays with you, and I've reread it. I just think it's masterful, that level of sort of intensity and suspense, and I just thought it was extraordinary.
Now, you've given us two books, and as it happens, one of the books was mentioned only a few weeks ago by Durin the Glocken in her Culture Club when she picked Michael McGee's Close to Home.
Ah, my goodness.
This is a Belfast man, a young Belfast writer, isn't it?
Yes, he's absolutely amazing. He's absolutely amazing. It's difficult in a show like this when it's like all your favorite things to not keep using the same superlatives. But I'll try and mix up my superlatives. it's phenomenal. It really is. And I wrote a little bit about it. I don't write a lot on social media. But I couldn't not write about that book when it first came out, because I devoured it. And it's funny because one of my very best mates, Davey Matchett, was reading it at the same time as me, and we both had the same thing. We're like, I'm just saving the last four pages. I literally don't want it. I don't want it to be over. I was sort of reading those four pages like very, very slowly, like just hoping there'd be a sequel at the back of the book that you unlock when you finish it. But it showed a part of Belfast that I didn't really know, to my eternal shame. It's sort of a place, a part of the city, a big, big part of the city, the heart of the city that I just didn't know. And it feels like when somebody is revealing your home city to you and you don't know it, there's a little bit of shame in there. And there's also this little, you have to have humility about it as well. I love being informed of things that I don't know, and I'm humble enough to know that that's going to happen every day, because there's plenty of stuff I don't know.
Your all-time favorite book would also be one of mine. I'm going to say Jennifer Egan's A Visit from the Goon Squad. Try and explain it to listeners.
Oh my goodness! Try and explain it.
sorry, I know that's unfair.
I'm glad that you put that on me. Well, it's like it's 13 kind of interconnected stories. There are characters that pop up in all the stories. It's related to the music business, which is maybe why I have such a love of it. And it sort of goes, it spans a long time, I think like 50 years or something, the whole span of the book. And what's something I also love, one of my favorite books of all time is Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. And, it's this person living in the sort of randomly sort of thrown into various parts of their life, throughout, and time kind of doesn't really make sense. And that I took a lot of inspiration for that in my own book, from my own book, and from Jennifer Egan as well. So she's a big inspiration for me. And trying to explain A Visit from the Goon Squad to someone who hasn't read it is a tricky prospect.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it.
Beautiful, beautifully written book. She's an amazing writer. I also highly recommend her other novels as well, The Keep or Manhattan Beach. Manhattan Beach is one of my favorites.
That's terrific.
Too. I could have picked really any of hers.
Or even the sequel to A Visit from the Goon Squad, The Candy House, is also a terrific read. It was only from 2022. Let's just hear a little bit from the audiobook of A Visit from the Goon Squad.
The shame memories began early that day for Benny. During the morning meeting, while he listened to one of his senior executives make a case for pulling the plug on Stop Go, a sister band Benny had signed to a 3-record deal a couple of years back. Then, Stop Go had seemed like an excellent bet. The sisters were young and adorable. Their sound was gritty and simple and catchy. Cyndi Lauper meets Chrissy Hynde had been Benny's line early on. With a big gulping bass and some fun percussion, he recalled a cowbell. Plus, they'd written decent songs. Hell, they'd sold 12,000 CDs off the stage before Benny ever heard them play. A little time to develop potential singles, some clever marketing, and a decent video could put them over the top. But the sisters were pushing 30. His executive producer, Colette, informed Benny now, and no longer credible as recent high school grads, especially since one of them had a 9-year-old daughter. Their band members were in law school. They'd fired 2 producers, and a 3rd had quit. Still no album.
A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan. Great choice, Gary. Favorite author, you've gone for Seamus Heaney.
Yeah, he changed my life in a lot of the same ways Nirvana did. Strange to kind of put Seamus Heaney and Nirvana together, but they're sort of almost intertwined for me in my life. I heard my, I wasn't very good at school, my English teacher, we had a new English teacher, and he started reading Digging by Seamus Heaney in the classroom one day. And as I heard the poem being read, it was almost like I was, like somebody was shaking me awake. Like I felt it in my soul. I profoundly felt something change and shift in me. And within a few weeks, I was writing poetry, and within a few months, I was published as a 15-year-old in like anthologies and stuff. So it really did change my life. And none of those poems are very good, of course, but the ones I wrote, I mean.
we knew what you meant, Gary.
Good. And he's always sort of been there through the last 30 years of my life. I actually put 12 of his songs, one from each poetry book, into music. I set them to music, and I performed three of them at the Seamus Heaney Centre at Queen's for the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. And two of his kids were there in the audience. So it was a big day for me. to get to interact with those songs, with those poems in that way. And have the blessing of the family to do it. I wouldn't have done it without their blessing, of course.
Let's hear Seamus Heaney himself reading from Digging.
My grandfather cut more turf in a day than any other man on Toner's Bog. Once I carried him milk in a bottle, corked sloppily with paper. He straightened up to drink it, then fell to right away, nicking and slicing neatly, heaving sods over his shoulder, going down and down for the good turf, digging. The cold smell of potato mould, the squelch and slap of soggy peat, the curt cuts of an edge through living roots awaken in my head. But I've no spade to follow men like them. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests. I'll dig with it.
Seamus Heaney and the poem Digging. Okay, we're running short on time, so I'm going to have to race at some of the rest of the stuff we have. I love your choices for TV shows as well. First, drama, The West Wing. There's almost, I think, a nostalgia for The West Wing at the moment. Maybe even a fictional White House, but there are still people who'd love to think it might be like that again someday.
I mean, you know, I think we even the first time around, it was, the last year of the Clinton administration, the second season was the first year of the Bush administration. So, I mean, and then the rest of the season were in the Bush administration. So there's always a kind of a wish for sometimes art to impose itself on reality. But The West Wing is something I watch every year. Like I'll start at Christmas time, I will start season one again and go all the way through. That'll be my Christmas viewing. It's just become just a sort of a tradition of mine just to do that every year because I love the show so much.
I like that. Arrested Development as a comedy. What a great choice. What an anarchic, brilliant, original comedy.
I don't think there's ever been anything like it before or since. I think there's been some things that get close to it, but I just don't think anything ever got close, especially the first three seasons. It is the funniest. It's very irreverent, but it just packs so many jokes. There's jokes happening in the background, in the foreground, on people's clothing. It is just a show that if you watch it 10 times, you will laugh in 10 different ways in each scene. I just think it's one of the cleverest, funniest, silliest shows that's ever been, and I adore it.
Yeah, we asked for a buried treasure and you were good enough to give us four: a book, an album, a documentary, a piece of music. So we'll quickly fly through them. Another Belfast woman, Jan Carson, her book, The Firestarters.
It's a wonderful novel. It really is a wonderful novel, and I adored it. It's a it's sort of marries the reality with myth in such a clever way, and it also has the sort of intensity of a summer in Belfast that can sometimes manifest, and it's just a fantastic book. And she has a line in the first, like, it's not that long into it, where she says Belfast is like a circle from one side and a square from the other. You could go blind just looking at it. And I just love that line so much.
That is a cracking line. An album I'm not familiar with, Fizz, The Secret to Life.
Well, they're a sort of a super group in a way, that different solo artists, one of which is from Ireland, one of which is Orla Gartland. I just think their album is absolutely magnificent. It really is magnificent. And it's a sort of a kind of hidden gem, but I think if people really love it if they heard it.
A documentary called Buck.
Yes, it's about Buck Buchanan, the guy that the Horse Whisperer movie was based on, and he's basically the guy that kind of one of the guys that sort of changed the face of horse training from the old style of like breaking a horse to the new style of gently making the horse feel comfortable and like kindly doing it with so much empathy and sort of affinity with the horses. And it's just an absolutely glorious documentary. I defy anybody to watch it without bursting into tears about 20 times, or maybe that's just me, but I adore it. I just think it's marvelous.
And your final choice, I think, is a music film, is it?
It's a live, this is a little bit more out there, but this is a live production, I guess, of the album Absolutely by Dijon. And I referred to him earlier, McGee, Michael Gordon is in his band before he became McGee. I think it's McGee, he pronounces it. Anyway, so it's basically them all sitting around like a kitchen table and playing the album, not in its entirety, but quite a lot of it. And it's about 25 minutes long. I don't know how many times I've watched it. It's a lot of times. I just think it's absolutely thrilling. And so, and such a great window into the life of a band, a really close-knit group of people that are all kind of just having a great time making music together. And I just think it's great to see that sort of thing when there's no kind of, there's no big production, and there's no kind of people aren't stopping to get styled halfway through. It's like it's just like guys hanging out and playing music and having a fantastic time, and it just feels like a nice window into their world.
Well, it's been fantastic having you with us, Gary Lightbody. Thank you so much for taking the time to think out about all your choices and to tell us all about them. Really, really have enjoyed it. And good luck to Snow Patrol and the rest of your world tour. And also on the new book, The Forest is the Path, which is out now. And of course, also as well, the extended version of The Forest is the Path album, the additional tracks from your last year's album, which are out now. Gary Lightbody, thank you so much.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you very much indeed. It's really nice to talk to you, Matt. The Last Word on Today FM.